Hello and welcome to the Unbundled Attorney Mastermind Podcast. My name is Dave Ahrens and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Unbundled Attorney. In this podcast, we interview many of our provider attorneys, as well as some of the leading experts in the industry to isolate the best practices for building internet-generated leads and how to ethically and effectively offer unbundled legal services and other more affordable options in your practice. For more information about our services, visit www.unbundledattorney.com. All right, I'm excited to bring you this interview with Sean Lynch, who's one of our attorneys out of Fort Worth, Texas. And we really cover a wide range of topics, but one of the things about Sean's firm is he is serving a very high volume of leads from our company in the Fort Worth metro. He received many as 100 leads in the past two-week period, so close to 200 leads a month. So he's had to develop some systems and tactics and strategies in order to field such a high volume of clients, which he shares on this podcast. He also talks about some of the flexible ways he works with people's budget, such as the traditional lower initial retainer and a payment plan. But he also talks about layaway payments, which is the second time one of our attorneys has shared how they use layaway, which he'll describe, which basically is payments towards initial retainer, which before he actually files the case. So he'll talk specifically about when and how he offers that option. And then we also talk about the importance of just being a good guy and relating well with your clients and what he learned from his father, who was a great salesperson and had to adapt due to some changing technology in his marketplace, mainly email, and just some core lessons, core philosophies that make a practice work, help you get lots of referrals and feel good at the end of the day. So it's a great episode with a solid guy out of Texas that's been seeing a lot of success with the leads we've been sending him. So let's get right into it. This interview with Sean Lynch, one of our provider attorneys out of Fort Worth, Texas. All right. Hey, Sean, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing really good. I'm really looking forward to this conversation today. You've certainly been one of our, higher volume lawyers. We're sending you a lot of leads in the Fort Worth metro area. So I'm really looking forward to hearing about the process you've developed, because obviously you've been doing extremely well, and diving into that so that other attorneys can hear what it is that you've developed over these many months of us working together as things continue to ramp up. So I really appreciate you taking the time to shine a light on everything that you've accomplished so far.
Yeah, that's great. I'm excited.
Okay, great. So maybe a good place to start is, so everyone else can get to know you a little better, is just share a little bit about your background, how you got your start in the practice of law, and the focus area and region of your practice.
Yeah. I went to the University of Oklahoma for undergrad and law school. And in law school, I had no intention of being a lawyer. While everyone else was learning how to practice law, I was learning how to run political campaigns. And I had my wife, my wife now, my fiance at the time, kind of took a look around and decided that she did not want to live in Norman, Oklahoma for the rest of her life. So we came back to the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and I set up in Fort Worth. I kind of bounced around from some civil, some in-house counsel jobs, and I had a friend practice family law and knew I wasn't happy where I was at. And he told me he said, well, if you want to try it out, come on down to the family law courthouse and pick a couple of child support cases and see if you like it. And so I started off, that was end of 2012 and 2013. And we got, started taking cases and just building from there.
Okay. So you've been doing family law for about the last 3.5-4 years out of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And maybe
that's
a good
right.
Point. Yep. And so that was kind of serendipitous to kind of draw you towards family law. And what's kept you continuing to work within the practice maybe it is just, it's very lucrative financially.
No, I enjoy my prior lawyer experience. I was in-house counsel, so it always felt like I was doing homework for a living, reviewing documents, reviewing discovery, things like that. With family law, there's the opportunity to go to court. We're in court every single day, and you also get to see there's an instant view of what you've done. So if you had a good day, you at the end of the day. If you had something that went sideways, then, and then you get to make a determination about how you can help these people out going further.
Yeah.
As opposed to prior, where just like, all right, so that's another case between two entities, the nameless, faceless entities that, like, oh, okay, that's done. Well, move on to the next one.
Yeah, you really get a chance to meet the folks, understand their situation, and also see the outcome of how you're able to serve them.
You have to, because that's what people are looking for.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So there's a certain degree of fulfillment in being able to take someone from point A to point Z, and whether that be reuniting them with their kids or getting them more time with them or resolving various circumstances. It's very tangible and real, and these are real challenges that people are going through. So I'm glad to hear that you take a specific interest in finding a way to help these folks. And certainly you've been helping a lot of folks, you know, since we started working together over the past 6 to 8 months. I mean, you served Dallas-Fort Worth. Can you give the listeners a bit of an idea of how many leads roughly that we send you and roughly how many of these clients are becoming cases, you know, out of a handful of 10 or 20 or whatever makes the most sense, so that people have an understanding of how many are you're working with here?
Yeah. So out of every 10 leads, in the area that we cover, and we cover Tarrant, you know, we cover a several Tarrant County, which is where Fort Worth is at, and several counties surrounding it. Out of every 10 leads, 8 of them are generally cases that we can do something with, that, you know, these aren't people looking for, it's not the wrong jurisdiction or the wrong, you know, type of case for us, or, you know, wrong legal. They're not looking for, if they're looking for a probate instead of a family law attorney. But out of every 10, 8 of them are something we can do. And, you know, on average, we've been signing up for one form of representation or another about 4 of those.
Yeah, so about 50% of the folks you talked to are about 4 out of 10 becoming clients. And then, you know, I looked at the last cycle here. I think we sent you about 100 leads in the last 2-week period alone. So things have certainly been ramping up on our end, but it gives folks an idea. So, I mean, you've got, you know, if we just do some simple math, 4 out of 10, 100 leads, that's, you know, 40 new clients potentially, you know, coming on board, and, you know, gradually, you know, there's also like a bit of a cycle. Sometimes folks take a couple of weeks to come on board and so forth, but, you know, 40 new clients. So you're really building up, you know, a high volume caseload here. So can you talk about how you've had to shift your focus or your practice in any way, if at all, either by bringing on more staff, implementing technology, or, you know, how you've been able to, have you had to adapt in order to serve such a high volume of cases?
Well, the biggest thing we've had to do is adapt is being available generally all the time via text or phone or email. Our office line, the number that our clients have for our office, also receives text messages, and I've just made a decision that, you know, I'm going to answer those when they come in. During the day, you know, we have people covering the phones and covering the text messages, but, you know, after 5 and on the weekends, I make it a point to respond to text messages as fast as I can, and then phone calls and things like that, phone calls and emails within a day. People want to be up to date, or if they have an issue, or if people are looking to set up, if a lead is wanting to come in or talk, or just has one question about the case, I find that being available is very important. You know, it's that thing where just have to, you know, 9/10 of it is just showing up, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah, and people are often surprised. Are people often surprised when you are able to get back to them so quickly, and they're actually speaking to a lawyer right off the gate?
Yes, most times they think that if I answer the phone after hours, they're going to assume it's an answering service of some sort. So I usually get this where I'll answer the phone and they'll ask, you know, I'm so and so, I'm calling to set an appointment with Mr. Lynch. I'm like, well, Sean, you got a minute to talk right now? Feel at least give them a little bit of information as soon as I can, because I always feel like that I appreciate that.
Yeah, and you mentioned that the text messages are also coming into the office line. Are you using a system like phone.com or something like that, so that the text messages are not your cell phone number but are actually the office line?
Or
are
we use Ring Central, which I've liked quite a bit. So we got one number that gets all our faxes, text messages, and then serves as our office line.
Okay, gotcha. And have you developed any form of systems on dealing with the text messages? You know, I know when we first get started working, we send you some templates that you can use to respond to the text messages. But has that been enough, or do you have ways in which you interact and with text messaging? you know, is the primary goal of those text messages to set appointments, you know, to have them, you know, to call you or to come in the office? I mean, what are you trying to accomplish with each text message? Yeah.
The primary goal of the text messages is to set up some sort of contact. So just to either have them respond to the text message so I can respond back, or have them call the office or call the office line. It's in the process of trying to turn a lead into a client, it is just all about making contact and then getting either getting a confirmed time to speak over the phone or have them come in the office. That's the most important use of text messages in our office. And then we do have a couple of different scripts we put out if it's the first contact, or if I've called prior and they haven't been able to answer, and or maybe they see, you know, I always assume they see a strange number and so they're not going to answer it, and we send a text message so they know who we are, so they know what number that is.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they don't necessarily recognize the number, so they may be screening the initial call, and so by sending that initial text message, a lot of people are like, oh, that's the attorney calling me back for my request. That's right. And so then they can respond from there. And so that text message really is just inviting them to call the office or set an appointment through text message, but mainly to get them on the phone. Or do you also, would you ever invite someone into the office straight off a text message, or is it always text message to phone, then you talk to them on the phone and then you have them come in?
I kind of play, everyone's different, you know, if it's an, and some people want to text, you know, set up an appointment by text. And so they'll like, well, I'd like to come in and talk to you, you know, what's your address and what time, you know, my calendar's on my phone. So I can, you know, if someone, you know, asks for that directly and I was like, okay, this is the next available time and here's our address. Let me know if you can make it. Other times people just, you know, I call with my information and they return, I text with my info and they call and set up an appointment, or they call and they ask to talk to me. And if I'm in the office and not with a client, well, I'm trying to make time to speak to them.
Yeah, absolutely. But mainly, you know, that's that first bridge just to get them either in the office or on the phone so you can have a chat with them. All right. And so,
yes. Yeah.
Okay. So let's, you know, say for example, you've then, you know, set up the call and you're on the phone with the client. What does that initial phone call station look like? How long does it typically take for you? Obviously you're converting a really high number of clients. Is your goal to spend a lot of, let's just talk a little bit about that phone call. And do you have all or most of the clients come into the office, or do some of them enroll? So maybe you can just talk a little bit about what your initial goal is on that first call.
So that first call, it's to get a thumbnail sketch of what's going on with their particular situation. Are you getting divorced? Is there is someone trying to get a modification of a prior order? You know, are they fighting over possession and access of a child? You know, get a thumbnail sketch of what's going on. Get a name. Get maybe a case number if it's an ongoing thing, so I can look it up on the online records of the, let's say, like Tarrant County. And then after we get to looking at it for a little bit, you know, get them in the office. And then once we get them in the office, after about a half an hour interview, consultation, we'll ask them to fill out some information about themselves, the other party, what exactly has led us to this situation. And then we'll sit down and we'll talk through their options at that point. I prefer for them to come in because that way they can sit down and take time to write out, you know, the information they want to give me. And so give them time to kind of focus on what they're wanting to talk about. And it makes it easier for me to provide them, you know, the advice they're looking for.
Right. Okay. And so when you're doing that initial call, is it about 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes? Does it range, or is it usually, you know, get that information, ask a few questions, get an idea what's going on, and then invite them to come in from there?
That first call can run anywhere between 10 and 15 minutes. And then even at that point, I'll still ask for them to come in because the face-to-face encounter, I think, is tremendously important. They can see, you know, they see me, they see my office staff, they meet the other attorney that works in my office and move things forward like that. So they get a sense of the people that are going to be working with them. I think that's quite a, that helps quite a bit too. We're a small office, two attorneys, we have three support staff. And when you come in, you meet everybody, and these are the people working for you. And I think that is something people look forward to. I think it helps.
Yeah. And when you spoke to, when you talked to the client on the phone, that next step, that in-person meeting, is that also a free consultation as well?
It depends on the on that phone call. If I'm on the phone with you for half an hour or more, we've run out of stuff to talk about with your case.
Sure.
So at that point, it's like, if you want to come in, you know, come in and you know, let's get ready to go. Let's move. Let's either file the suit or file our answer, or let's get the ball rolling. If we're on the phone for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and it's, you know, it's just a getting to know you and you know, what your initial concern is, the next consult's always free. It may be a little shorter just because we've covered everything, but yeah, we, you know, if I'm on the phone with you for 5 minutes, I'm not going to charge you for the next consult.
Yeah. And how do you gauge that? How do you decide whether this is going to be someone that you're going to chat with, you know, at length on the phone? Is it, do you kind of decide, talk to the client about, well, do you want to come in the office, or do you want to just have this chat over the phone and I can get in all the details now? Or you know, so how does that, how do you end up deciding whether it's going to be a longer call or if you're going to like touch base and then have them come in?
Try to work with the client. If, you know, if they, like if someone, if I got a referral just now while we're on the phone and I turned around and made the call and they're like, well, I'm going on my lunch break, so I can talk right now. And I can talk here in 10 minutes and let, you know, I have a bunch of questions for you. And yeah, you know, we'll end up talking on the phone for 30 minutes at that time. So they don't have to try to take off from work, come in on a Saturday when maybe, you know, that's interfering with family time, things like that. Try to work around the lead's schedule and any way we can, I mean, as much as possible to let them know that, just to work with them and be able to at least, you know, have a conversation with them.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And so, can you talk about, I mean, obviously to be able to have as many of the folks enrolling as they are, you know, about, you know, 40%, if not half, you know, just because you're talking about, you know, 80% of the clients, you must be offering some kind of flexible ways in which you're working with the clients. Can you talk about some of the either unbundled or limited scope or the various different types of options that you've, you know, cultivated or crafted to be able to work with people within their budget in this area, in this region?
Yeah, the unbundled package is by far the most popular. Texas, the Supreme Court in Texas has forms that they put online that are free to people. So I have very limited people coming in and wanting us just to draft anything because they can get the forms for free somewhere else. Generally what happens is people either will come in and ask about us representing them, and the unbundled package is the thing that is the most appealing. And it's, you know, we have the initial retainer, and then our contract is explicit about the cost per service provided, and just per item. You know, it's a hearing, a temporary orders hearing, you know, costs X amount of dollars. For us to draft pleading costs, you know, a set amount. And when they come in and they sign up, we go over the contract. We explain to them, like, this is what it is. You know, so when I tell you we're going to a temporary orders hearing next week, you know exactly how much that's going to cost, so be prepared. And we also work with people on making payments because you know, it's just oftentimes, you know, we got people who come in every other Friday with a payment, and we keep up with that. But yeah, I mean, that's by far the most popular. I've found that the limited representation stuff just not as much here, at least in the Metroplex. I think that's mostly due to the. You can go online just about anywhere and find Texas forms.
Yeah. Okay. And so when you talk about the unbundled package, usually what you're talking about is not just document preparation, but also preparation and an appearance for a specific hearing, or can you talk about what that typically will encompass?
Yeah. If they come in and they don't want to, they're not asking about forms or us to do some sort of limited representation there. I mean, most times it's at the beginning of an issue. They either just got served or they want to go get divorced. And, you know, we tell them that it's, it ends up being a full representation because we'll get it done faster than they will. I mean, that's the long and short of it. We've had people hire us at the end of a end of a hearing, or I'm sorry, end of a divorce before the trial, just to make an appearance and do the trial. But by far, most people want us to come and handle the entirety of their case.
Okay. Okay. So it's more of a full representation service that the majority of clients are electing to move forward with. But then you're just being creative about the way in which you're working with people's budget so that, you know, people don't have to come up with the, you know, something that they can't afford all the way up front.
Yes, that's absolutely right.
Yeah. So can you talk about the different ways in which you've structured, you know, that initial retainer, or maybe you can be specific about some of the arrangements that you've had with clients, the types of payment plans you've offered, so that attorneys that, you know, maybe haven't offered these as frequently can get a little bit more feedback or ideas on ways in which they could be more flexible, as opposed to being really rigid about the, you know, full upfront retainer.
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends on the type of case you have. If it's a couple of 20-year-old kids who got excited and went to Vegas and got married and came home and realized that was a mistake, and they both agree that they need to get divorced. We obviously will charge a flat rate for that plus the filing fee, and that's one example. Or if it's a really contested matter and someone's wanting to hire us, so they don't have the full retainer just yet, we'll let them make payments on the retainer, and then we just set that aside until they're ready, essentially layaway. And the other parts are if we actually have quite a few people who come in every other pay or every 2 weeks on payday, and, you know, put down a set amount of money that we've agreed to. I spend a lot of time once people do sign up, I spend a lot of time asking people about, you know, what their work schedule is, how much money they're making, looking at what debts they have, you know, because if it's a wife and mother who just got served divorce papers and she hasn't worked outside the house ever, and, you know, she has limited funds, you know, I'm not going to, it makes no sense to me to try to squeeze everything out of her that sounds terrible, but, you know, I don't want to squeeze anyone. I don't want to make life harder for someone going through something that's hard to begin with. So, you know, we customize our billing and our agreements to an extent for each client.
Yeah, this has been something that's come up on a few different podcast episodes, and something that we've talked about with a lot of attorneys that come on board is this, you know, a lot of attorneys having a lot of success in offering payment plans and being more flexible with clients on the front end, and how this enables them to, you know, have a lot more clients retaining them, you know, and that's really kind of the upside, is that you have so many more folks being able to take that initial step, because it's just not it becomes a barrier that they can jump through. You know, they can overcome, as opposed to, you know, 5,000 or something that's a lot higher that the average working family would have a lot more trouble coming up with. So obviously you have the upside of, you know, so many more clients being able to afford it. And so that obviously means, you know, more paying clients to the firm. How do you balance out structuring payment plans when you have time factors, or when you have folks that need a lot of upfront work? Or do you find that the majority of folks, even if you're not, do you find in the majority of cases with family law, you're not actually following behind in the payment plans? Or is that something that you have to kind of balance out, and some clients get a little behind? How has that worked out for you in offering that kind of flexibility, generally speaking?
Well, generally speaking, you know, we have support staff who watches it, and we keep a calendar and a list of when people are supposed to make payments and when they what's due. And, you know, we send our bills out, and then we send out a reminder, and then our contract talks about how if you owe us a certain amount of money, we need to discuss whether or not we're going to continue on with representation. And we use that and as a way to get someone in the office to discuss, okay, what's going on? What can we do? You know, depending on where we are in the case, if we're almost done with it, like, what can we do to help you move this on? And we can agree to that. It's trying to be, we got to be mindful of everyone's, you know, particular situation, but we also have to be mindful that of just making sure that we hold people to what they said they're going to do. And that just requires us to you know, watch, manage these files and watch when payments are coming in, and take a note of who's making, doing it like they're supposed to, and who do we have to call and remind.
Maybe it would also be helpful, could you give an example? I mean, obviously every case is different. You got custody, you got visitation, you got contested divorce, but like, you know, general custody, visitation, contested matters, these types of things. Maybe a typical full representation up from retainer would be, and then some of the example options you've offered as a more flexible upfront fee, and, you know, typical payment plans, what that might look like as far as amounts that you've offered in the past that have worked out well, so that there's a bit of context.
Yeah, sure. So say someone comes in and they just got served with a petition for divorce, and their children are involved, and they have a hearing in 2 weeks on temporary orders, where they're going to decide about, you know, access and possession and temporary conservatorship and child support and things like that. They'll come in and say, you know, our retainer for something like that would be, upfront retainer would be $1,500. And if, you know, then our standard contract that has, you know, the price per service provided listed in it, they come in and like, well, you know, Sean, it's 2 weeks away and I don't have it all today. It's like, okay, what can you do today? If you can do 3 payments of 5, that'll be perfect before the hearing. And then after that, you know, if you need to be on a payment plan, then we'll take a credit card from you or a debit card, and we'll call you every other week and let you know what the balance is and let you know what it is, and you can make a payment, or we can just agree that you're going to pay, you know, say $250 every other week to keep everything on the straight and narrow and us up to date. Those are generally how those end up working out.
And do you use any form of, you know, payment automating service like LaPay or something where you can code in the amount of money that you guys have worked out, whether it be $250 every couple of weeks or something like that, so that payment automatically deducts, or not yet?
Not yet. We, a lot of our clients, actually, I'll be honest with you, a lot of our clients are preferring to pay in cash and checks for whatever reason. And then the people who do give us credit cards, they sign an authorization for us to run it, and then we'll send them a note that, hey, we're going to run the card for this amount, or, you know, they'll agree ahead of time to those payments. But we haven't quite gotten into doing anything online with payments with anyone like LawPay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a way to kind of automate and streamline that, some of those payment processes, so it doesn't have to be done manually each time. But you know, obviously, you've got the authorization form completed either way, so you can. I'm sure it's been working well, just fine in the way you've done it as well. So, okay, so a lot of folks are being opting, and I'm sure, you know, it's Texas, so a lot of folks, you know, probably, you know, like doing that belly to belly, you know, using cash and so forth. It's a little bit more conservative, a little more old school in Texas, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And then our particular office, it's exciting. A lot of the clients, the leads that we're getting are coming from the diverse areas of Fort Worth. And so, you know, I've found that for whatever reason, it's just people have cash faster. People always have cash, and some people are leery of putting stuff on a credit card.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so once you kind of get people enrolled in the service, get them moving forward in the process. What are the obviously you're taking on a lot of cases, and so have there, you know, in the last 6 months, have you had to bring on staff, or you mentioned that you have another attorney in the firm? Is that a contract lawyer? Is it a full time attorney? Is it your partner? You know, how have you been able to manage, you know, such a higher caseload with, you know, as this has grown over the past few months?
The other attorney's a full-time attorney, and we brought on some support staff, and it's just we handle every case as a team. So when people call in, they want to know what's going on with their case. We have our paralegal, and then our two support staff are able to give them updates, and then when they need any hearings or court dates coming up or hearings coming up, myself and my attorney and the other attorney in my office, we keep up to date on everyone's cases and make sure that we're able to either, you know, answer their questions, or oftentimes we'll show up and work a case together. I mean, it's a flat rate for showing up at a hearing, so people like it when two lawyers show up.
Yeah. Do you, when you enroll a new client, do you make a decision on whether it's going to be someone that you're going to be representing or your partner? Like, for example, we've had a lot of attorneys that initially started out as a solo practitioner and then obviously started getting a high volume of leads. And so then they brought on contract lawyers where, you know, they did the enrollment and got the person in the office, and then that case was assigned to that contract lawyer, and they just had like a split where, you know, the contract lawyer got paid X and then the firm got paid, you know, their full rate minus X. And they had kind of an arrangement like that. And then they just provided all of the staff, all the overhead and all that kind of stuff. Do you have that kind of contract relationship with the attorney, or is this attorney and a partner? In which case, you know, how do you determine which client goes to whom and so forth?
Oh, well, it's she's an employee. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest with you, it's by feel. So if we get involved, you know, we say someone hires us for a divorce and we show up for a first hearing and we're both able to be there and the client clicks more with her than they do with me for whatever reason, it's kind of a natural progression. They'll start calling for her, or they'll call for me instead and then go from there. But we let everyone know at the beginning of their contract that, hey, you know, we're both here, you know, we're both here for you. We're both working on your case. So just, you know, if they have a preference, it ends up sorting itself out.
Hmm. So the way you've approached it is more of like a tag team approach where, you know, you have your basically an associate attorney that's doing some of the legal work as opposed to contracting the entire case to one attorney or another. You guys are just working together on it, and then she's doing some of the work, you're doing some of the work, and you both work together on each matter, depending on, you know, obviously
that's
the client.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly how we do it.
Yeah. And so obviously you know, one of the things you mentioned a little earlier is the importance of responding to each of these clients in real time. You have, you know, at the amount of leads we're sending, it's, you know, you're getting 6, 7, 8 leads a day coming in throughout all the different times of the day. How do you balance out the process? Are you always the one that responds to each lead? And if so, how do you balance out, obviously, you know, working with the clients throughout the day and also being able to respond to all the new leads that are coming in at the same time and finding that balance?
That has been the trick. I feel it's important that if they, you know, they see law office of Sean Lynch and they're calling, they need to talk to me first. And the way that it balances out is that our support staff, which has always been great, has just taken up the load in regards to day-to-day work in the office, whether it's just, you know, getting notice out, drafting pleadings so I can review them, setting the appointment. Say someone, you know, the lead calls in and, excuse me, wants an appointment, the office gets it set, and then that really has freed me up to make the initial contact with the leads. And we just work it out. It's been something where we've hit a nice little sweet spot where everyone's busy all day, but it's a good busy, so it's worked itself out.
Yeah. And so when folks call in and they just want to set up an appointment, your staff can handle that where they just, you know, come on in if it's an inbound dial, or does the staff always get them on the phone with you first and then you might just hand them off to do the booking on the calendar, for example?
They'll if I'm in the office, what they'll do is they'll hand them to me first, and then I'll send them back to do the appointment. If they are calling and I'm either in court or I'm on the phone or just otherwise busy, they'll get the appointment information, and I always make sure to follow that up with either a text or a call myself.
Yeah, that personal contact. So that, you're always making sure you have personal contact with the lead initially. Even if the staff member takes that initial call first.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah, it's going to help them take the next step and so forth. Okay. Now, and I wanted to circle back on something you mentioned a little earlier, which we just kind of breezed over, which was you mentioned layaway. Can you talk about a little bit more about what layaway is? And I know it's, you know, a relatively new concept that, you know, you've started to offer in your practice since we've talked, but can you describe how layaway is different from, you know, say just an initial retainer and a payment plan?
Yeah, layaway is this: it's someone comes in and they have a case and they can't even do the retainer. I'm like, all right, well, what can you do today? and how can you pay on this retainer? And we'll take that, you know, set up the payments on the retainer, and then once that's paid, we can get started. You know, that's that money goes into a trust account, and it's sitting there waiting for them to get started with, you know, when they're ready to go, and when they come or when they have the money to proceed with the divorce or whatever else they want to do. It's just, you know, we sock it away and then they make payments. I kind of leave it up to the lead. You know, I ask them some basic questions about, you know, what do you do? When do you get paid? You know, who's living in your house? How many people are you caring for? You know, can you do this over the next 3 weeks or a month or, you know, whenever? And then if they agree to that, if it's something they can do, we do it that way.
Yes. In other words, there's basically a threshold that they have to meet or come up with before legal work is getting done on their case. Let's say it's $1,000 or $1,500. And so you basically, because a lot of attorneys that say, okay, let's say the initial retainer is $1,000 or $1,500, something like that. You know, not only do they not break it up into three payments, but if the person doesn't have resources today, or maybe they only have $100 or $200, the average attorney would just, you know, turn that client away and say, okay, well, once you have the $1,500, give me a call. So layaway is different in the sense that you'll make a payment arrangement with them for them to start making payments towards the $1,500. And then once that full payment is, you know, the full balance is covered in the trust account, then that's when the legal work is basically executed and filed. Is that right?
That's right. They're making payments on they're essentially making payments on the retainer, and once that happens, we get started. And then the client's aware of that. They know that, you know, to come in, they can say, you know, it's a $1,500 retainer, like, oh, I have a C50. I was like, okay, that's fine. We can get started with that and let us know. Let's set up this payment arrangement to get us up to the $1,500, and then we can get started. And most people people who find themselves in that spot are very receptive to making payments like that, because they understand that their, you know, filing fees and you know, costs to have someone serve that's necessary and things like that. So they, you know, they're more than willing to, if I'm willing to work with them, I find that most people are willing to, you know, stick to what they say they're going to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, on some degree, if you're doing layaway, that they know that their case isn't going to get filed until they come up with the amount. But do you find that a lot of people, and again, I know this is still somewhat new, but do you find that people appreciate having, you know, some structure, like a structure payment plan towards whatever that balance is, as opposed to being left to their own devices to have to save the money on their own?
Yeah, it's essentially just it's a bill that they're paying on, or it's a, you know, it's something they can budget for. And I think people appreciate that quite a bit.
Yeah. I can only assume that, you know, folks that have been somewhat of limited means in the past. I mean, a lot of folks that are struggling financially, there's always other bills that, you know, can really get their attention first. You know, they get, you know, paid, and, you know, not everyone has great spending habits. And so I can only assume that it just must be nice for them to know that they're putting that money away and it's moving them forward towards getting their custody case filed or visitation rights, because maybe left in their own hands, you know, the money might get spent, you know?
No, exactly. And that's I mean, it's just like I said, if they're used to paying for everything on a, you know, on a weekly, biweekly period, it's, you know, it's just something else they can add on, and it makes sense. It's that $250 every other week or $400 every other week is a lot less scary than, you know, $1,500 right now. I think people also just appreciate you working with them. As you don't, they don't feel like they're just a number on a file. They're, you know, a name, and someone's trying to help them in a situation that, while we see it, you know, we see these things every day, it's new to them, and it's, you know, it's them, they're about to go through a big old change in their lives. And I think they appreciate someone, you know, understanding that and trying to help them move through it.
I'm curious your own opinion. I mean, this is something that it seems like you've naturally embraced, as far as just being flexible with folks and working within their budget and finding ways to meet their legal needs in a creative manner that they can also afford, and not, and trying to limit the amount of folks you have to turn away. You know, layaway being one of the creative methods you use, you know, more flexible initial retainer fees. But even in courts you go in, and certainly maybe colleagues, you know, there's a lot of attorneys that don't necessarily offer these types of payment options, and are a lot more rigid in the way they do it. Do you think to a large degree it has more to do with, you know, attorneys just not realizing the opportunity of being able to work with more clients in this way, or maybe they're just not aware of it, or is it just that that's just the way they do it and they don't feel flexible? Like, why do you think that so there's still so few attorneys that have embraced this type of way of working with folks that you have up till now?
Well, I think the whole legal community in general is slow to change, slow to move on to keep up with either technology or changes in business. And I think that's part of it. And it's ingrained in people that, you know, you need to talk about how much you make per hour how much you charge per hour, and, you know, get that big retainer or else. And for me personally, where our office is and where I live, it's a pretty diverse area. And it's, you want to be able to help everybody who comes in the best you can. And I find that doing it this way, running this business as we have, provides us the opportunity to help more people than if I just said, all right, it's $3,000. And then if you don't have $1,000 in my trust account every month, you know, you got to pay up to that. And, I'm going to bill you at $250 an hour, and, you know, that's it. We'll talk to you next time we got to go to court. There's something off-putting to that. And I don't think my personality or could work that way.
Well, yeah, I agree. You know, I'm not sure. Do you have a kind of more working class upbringing, or, you know, what was it for you that, you know, has this compassion for folks that otherwise don't have the ability to shell out the $3,000 and work with attorneys in such a manner?
Yeah, it is. I mean, my dad, we moved to Texas because my dad sold envelopes. We moved here so he could work here in the early 90s, like right before everyone figured out how to use email. So it was going from learning from that experience and his experience of having to adapt and being able to relate to, and he was, you know, being a salesman, he was having to relate to everybody. So whether or not it was the executive or, you know, the guy in the warehouse, he was the guy who kind of controlled access to things. You got to be able to relate, and you got to be able to find a solution that makes you some money and provides the service they need. And I think that's just what you're supposed to do. Like, also, you know, for every time you're reasonable with somebody, that person's going to tell other people that you know what you did for them, and that helps. That's just natural, it's a natural or organic way to build referrals and, you know, get more people in the door.
Yeah, what a concept. You know, if you treat people well, they might actually want to refer more people to you, huh?
Yeah, I know, right? Sometimes we lose that. We talk about, you know, yes, I agree. I think doing that's just a good business model.
Yeah, you know, Sean, it's something that Graham has shared with me as well, and him, you know, communicating with you and working with you over these past few months, and certainly, you know, what I get from having our conversations as well is just that, you know, you seem like a down to earth guy, and you relate. You know, you're a good communicator. You know, you relate well. Is there anything that maybe either your father taught, or just, you know, growing up, you just learned that allowed you to just make people feel more comfortable, or just, I don't know if it's kind of, maybe it's hard to look at yourself from a, you know, kind of a, you know, overview standpoint, but, you know, I don't know if you came through some sales training or something like that or what, but, you know, what is it that, what energy or what feeling do you try to bring in, or what is your philosophy about the way in which you treat clients? Is there things that you hold in your mind, or do you try to picture them? Do you just sit down with them? Do you remember how it was like when you were struggling? I mean, what are there any things that you can think of that allow you to relate better with your clients and help them feel more comfortable, like you're describing?
I think it's just that, well, I'll tell you, some of it's, you know, probably stuff I learned from watching my dad be a salesperson, and then my mom works for the school district in personnel, so watching her as well, learn how to, you know, you got to read somebody pretty quick, both of them for that matter. You learn to read someone quick and figure out what's the best way to approach their problem, or, you know, or the person themselves. But I just find that people want someone who listens and then responds to what they said. And if you take the time to do that, and then you'll if you take the time to listen to people and then watch them talk to you, you'll figure out what they need, and then what they'll how they'll respond to you. So every client's different. Some clients need a shoulder to cry on, and some clients need you to shake them sideways to get the idea through their head and figure that out pretty quick.
Whether you have to kind of give them the straight talk, or you got to really just be a good listener and someone that can kind of feel into the struggle that they're dealing with and be more of an emotional support.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like I said, every case you had to abide by the same rules, right? It's the same laws and statutes and local rules, are applied. You just have to make a determination for yourself how you're going to communicate this to the client. If you take everyone as one size fits all, then no one's going to be absolutely happy with what they get.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I guess maybe the final thing I'll ask you just before we wrap up, and again, I appreciate you just jumping on here and just sharing so openly about the ways in which you've been relating to folks, the types of options you've been offering, the flexibility, the layaway, everything you've been doing to just try to meet people where they're at and give them an option that they can afford and help them out in any way you can. I think that's really what this is all about. So I guess, it's just the sheer number of clients and leads that you've worked, over these past, 6-8 months since we first started working together. Is there anything that you take away as a lesson or any mistake that you made, early on that you've since fixed that you could see a lot of attorneys making it, if they haven't, taken enough leads or just, getting started in the process that you've adapted to and implemented in your process?
I think at the beginning and the thing that I had to learn be very emphatic about is once you get the lead, make the call. And even if you find out that this person, they live in Tarrant County, they live in Fort Worth, but it turns out that this divorce that they want to talk to you about is happening in Cleveland. You still gotta, instead of going, okay, I can't help you, bye, you stay on the phone, you talk to them for a while, you provide whatever information or at least an ear for them to let loose on for a minute. And then that inevitably will, even if you can't help them now, they know who you are and they'll come back later. I know we've had people call when we first started, they'd have something that we couldn't help them with, but we took the time to talk to them, or I did. I took the time to talk to them on the phone and listen to hear them out and provide what little assistance I could. They come back and they made referrals. So I think that's the thing I had to learn is just spend more time, even though there's more clients coming in, spend more time than we were prior with each and every one that takes the time to look us up or become a lead.
And that's probably the easy pitfall of when you start getting a lot more leads coming in or a lot more clients retaining is to forget what it was like to get that first lead. And hey, then you call them up and you take the time and you really put the energy in and that every new client, it's still the first time they've ever heard from you, even though you've been doing all kinds of work for some of the other people, to almost have that kind of beginner's mind and really give them that person the time that they deserve from the very first get-go. It's really easy to get away from that.
Yeah, it is. And that is something that we, every day I strive to avoid doing.
Yeah. I remember that from many years of working in the legal access plan and taking a lot of leads every day. It's like, you got to remember that every single person, is brand new to what they're dealing with, first time they talk to you. And so you have to bring the same energy and commitment to every single call, even if it might be the, sixth call you did that day or the 30th that week to a new lead. Really staying diligent about, communicating and listening and taking that extra bit of time. I think that's a really good point. That extra bit of time, that extra bit of attention so that the people feel really heard and understood and cared about.
I agree. I think that helps more than anything.
Yep. And it's also good to hear that, treating people well leads to more business in the back end as well, which we talked about earlier, which, may come to as a surprise to some, but it's good to know that the universe or whoever out there, when you treat people well, it comes back and pays you in dividends in the long run. It's good to hear that it's set up that way.
Yeah, on a personal level, a little bit more satisfaction in my employment and doing this job that people appreciate what you're doing when you and it just takes a little effort.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, speaking of appreciation, Sean, thanks. I want to appreciate you for coming on to the show and sharing so openly about the way you've been working with folks. I couldn't be more excited and pleased to hear the amount of people you're being able to serve and the success you're having working with us and beyond us as well. And so I just thank you for taking the time and sharing what it is that you've been doing.
Hey, thank you. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. All right. And so for everyone else who's listening, we certainly appreciate your participation in the podcast. If you're a family law attorney or know of any other family law, immigration, or estate planning attorneys that can benefit from listening to these episodes, please feel free to share it. That's how this podcast has grown and how these messages and options are shared with many others is through a word of mouth. And so we certainly appreciate that in support of the show and in support of serving more clients through these types of options. So thank you for that. And until next time, thanks so much for listening. We'll see you all in the next episode.
For more information about how our lead generation services can help you grow your practice, visit our website at www.unbundledattorney.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to subscribe so you get each new episode as soon as it's available, and leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Once again, thanks for listening.